Welcome to Journal Club for February 15th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Dix. Cardiovascular disease is a killer. It affects nearly half of American adults and is responsible for more deaths worldwide than any other disease. But when it's caught early, there is a lot that can be done. Lifestyle changes, medications, dietary adjustments, and regular exercise, to name a few. So it's imperative that medical professionals have the tools they need to spot the onset or even the risk of future onset as early as possible. And that's where today's research comes in. In this paper, the authors are building a multi-layer perceptron, MLP, that can scan a patient's survey responses, assess the risk factors, and flag the patient as being high risk or not. If the patient is flagged as high risk, that analysis can be used as the justification the doctor needs to perform more thorough tests, screens, and even interventions. On today's episode, we're going to start by diving into the problem space a bit more. Before we can understand how this model operates, we need to get a better understanding of what exactly it's looking for in the patient's responses. What are they trying to find? What kind of data points correlate most strongly with heart disease? Then we'll turn to the model itself. What is a multi-layer perceptron exactly? How does it work? And how was this particular model constructed and trained to detect the risk of disease? Let's jump into it. When we talk about heart disease or cardiovascular disease, we're actually talking about a constellation of different issues. Under normal, healthy conditions, your heart pumps blood around your body with regular timing and regular pressure. The blood flows through arteries and veins that bulge, flex, and bend, providing an unobstructed and tightly sealed pathway to every organ and tissue in your body. In cardiovascular disease, the system starts to break down. Arteries may become stiff or clogged with plaque, and this can disrupt blood flow. The heart's rhythm can become erratic, its pumping power may weaken, or its valves may fail to function properly. These changes can lead to chest pain, fatigue, shortness of breath, or even life-threatening events like heart attacks and strokes. It's important to understand that heart disease isn't one thing. It also isn't a simple binary yes-no, like a stab wound or a broken bone. There's a continuum of symptoms and issues. Once you exhibit certain biomarkers or symptoms over a given threshold for a given amount of time, doctors say that you're in a diseased state. For example, a single bout of high blood pressure or irregular heartbeat doesn't necessarily mean you have cardiovascular disease, but either of those over a given threshold for a given amount of time might indicate that. So when we talk about quote-unquote early detection of heart disease, we're really talking about two things. One, the lowering of those thresholds so that what would otherwise be considered a pre-diseased state is treated with urgency. And two, the assessment of lifestyle factors, clinical history, and family history in a way that allows medical professionals to flag certain individuals as high risk. This paper is about that latter method. It's not about scanning MRIs or ECGs with a finer tooth comb. It's about scanning through the patient's other data to determine if there is latent or hidden risk that might be missed by the usual battery of tests. If there is, then the patient might be eligible for a preventative treatment plan to steer them away from the road they're currently walking down. So how does this system work? Well, as I mentioned, it's a multi-layer perceptron. Let's look at what a perceptron is at first, and then the multi-layer part will come into focus. A simple perceptron is the most basic type of artificial neural network. It consists of a single layer of neurons that directly map input features to an output. Each neuron in perceptron receives multiple numerical inputs, applies a corresponding weight to each, sums the weighted inputs, and then passes the result through an activation function that produces an output. This is typically a step function that produces a binary output. This means a perceptron functions as a linear classifier, capable of distinguishing between two classes only if they are linearly separable, meaning they can be divided by a straight line or a hyperplane. While these are effective for simple classification problems like AND or OR logic gates, a single-layer perceptron fails to model more complex relationships where data points cannot be neatly separated by a single decision boundary. A multi-layer perceptron, an MLP, extends the capabilities of a simple perceptron by introducing one or more hidden layers between the input and output layers. These hidden layers contain neurons that perform additional transformations on the input data before passing it to the next layer. Critically, each of these neurons applies a non-linear activation function, such as a rectified linear unit or a sigmoid function, allowing the network to model non-linear relationships that a simple perceptron can't handle. Another key distinction is the learning mechanism. While a perceptron updates its weights using a simple rule based on classification errors, an MLP is trained using backpropagation. This actually involves two steps: forward propagation, where inputs move through the network to generate predictions, and backward propagation, where the model compares its output to the true value and adjusts its weights using a gradient descent optimization algorithm. By repeatedly refining these weights based on errors, the MLP gradually improves its accuracy. To tailor their MLP to heart disease, the authors introduced a series of enhancements to improve accuracy, efficiency, and generalization. Their enhanced multi-layer perceptron, EMLP, differs from a standard MLP by incorporating three things. 1. Optimized weight initialization. 2. An adaptive learning rate. And 3. Regularization techniques to prevent overfitting. Now, they knew they were going to use a dataset with 16 risk factors, more on that later. So their architecture includes an input layer with 16 neurons, one for each factor. These inputs are processed through two hidden layers. The first consists of 68 neurons designed to capture high-dimensional interactions among risk factors, and the second consists of 34 neurons, refining the extracted features before classification. Each neuron applies an activation function, likely a rectified linear unit, to introduce non-linearity, ensuring the model can distinguish complex patterns rather than just linear correlations. The final output layer contains a single neuron with a sigmoid activation function, mapping the process information to a probability score that indicates the likelihood of heart disease presence or risk. But the author's work actually went beyond the architecture. The model's training process was also carefully optimized to improve reliability and prevent overfitting. The authors incorporated dropout regularization, a technique that randomly deactivates neurons during training to ensure the network does not rely too heavily on specific patterns. Additionally, L2 regularization was applied to constrain the magnitude of weight values. This reduced the risk of the model fitting noise rather than meaningful trends. The learning rate was also dynamically adjusted throughout training, allowing for larger weight updates in the early stages to speed up convergence while progressively refining them as the model improved. The dataset I mentioned, the one with the 16 risk factors, was from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It was part of their Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, BRFSS, which collects annual health-related data from over 300,000 adults in the United States. This dataset includes demographic, behavioral, and clinical variables such as BMI, smoking history, diabetes, and self-reported physical and mental health. Prior to training, these variables underwent pre-processing steps to ensure consistency and comparability. This included scaling numerical variables to a standard range and encoding categorical variables into numerical form. These refinements were designed to enhance the model's ability to learn meaningful relationships between risk factors and potential heart disease outcomes. The dataset was split into training and testing subsets, so the model could learn from one portion of the data and then be evaluated on cases it hadn't seen. They ran through the training for multiple epochs, that's complete passes through the dataset, and then assessed the model's performance. The authors compared the EMLP to several traditional learning algorithms, including decision trees, random forest, support vector machines, k-nearest neighbors, naive Bayes, and a standard MLP. They looked at accuracy, precision, recall, and F1 score. As a reminder, accuracy measures how often the model makes correct predictions. Precision evaluates how many of the positive predictions were actually correct. Recall measures how well the model detects actual heart disease cases, and F1 score balances precision and recall into a single metric. They also used receiver operating characteristic, that's ROC curves, which plot how well the model distinguishes between high-risk and low-risk individuals at different decision thresholds. So, how did it do? Well, on one hand, their EMLP either outperformed or kept pace with all the other models. It technically achieved the highest accuracy among the models, although this was just barely so. and the precision, recall, and F1 score demonstrated that it was particularly effective at correctly identifying individuals at risk while minimizing false positives and false negatives. On the other hand, while its relative performance was impressive, its absolute performance was not. We're talking about accuracy scores in the low 90s here, 92%, 91%, etc. This may have been best in class, but that doesn't mean it's reliable enough to be used for any given case in the real world. So overall, I'd see this paper as a stepping stone. It's definitely pushing the technology to where we want it to go, but it certainly hasn't reached the destination yet. I'm sure the authors will be back with more refinements and improvements over time, and hopefully we'll see the absolute accuracy of these kinds of techniques get higher and higher. If you'd like to dive into their datasets, the model architecture, or their analysis in more detail, please do download the paper. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.